It is no secret that the vast majority of workshops, masterclasses, seminars, and team building presentations are boring. They're lackluster, they're cliche, and a lot of the time we feel like we could have been more productive doing literally anything else. But my guest today, Leanne Hughes, is here to change that. She has a brand new book out, The 2-Hour Workshop Blueprint, and in that she's giving us some really great tangible tips on how to run a great workshop, whether that's virtually or live, or in a 1-hour, 2-hour, or full day setting. Having worked all around the world in some big companies, some massive organizations, and locally in some smaller ones, Leanne's got this really great range of experience and advice as to what makes a workshop relatable and effective, what gets people excited, and also what to do when it doesn't go to plan. So some really great tangible advice in this episode. We talk about movies, we talk about traveling, lots of fun stuff. I really enjoyed this conversation, 40 minutes in and out. If you want to run a great workshop, this is the one for you. Here she is, everyone, Leanne Hughes on Coaches to the Moon.
This is Coaches to the Moon, the only podcast you need to skyrocket your coaching business and create true impact on the world. Here's your host, Alex Morris.
Welcome back to the Coaches to the Moon podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, after many reschedules, both on her end and mine, we are very, very proud to be joined by Leanne Hughes today. Speaker, author, coach, is there anything she can't do? She's got a brand new book out, 2-Hour Workshop Blueprint, which is already on the Amazon bestseller list. We've had a little chat and we hope to dig deeper into how she helps businesses, both large and small, with the problems that inevitably arise. Leanne Hughes, straight out of Brisbane, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for that. I love your enthusiasm and your energy, Alex. So thanks so much for that wonderful intro. It's great to be here.
No worries. I will say transparently, I do try very hard at the podcasting thing. And I watch a lot of more energetic podcasters, I suppose. It rubs off on you. Mm-hmm. Do you find that when you're, you know, obviously in this sort of personal development coaching space, we tend to read a lot of books and listen to a lot of things and you get into a content hole of one person. Do you find you tend to model the person you're listening to?
100%. And actually, that it's a good thing and also a bit of a trap sometimes. Like, I think my podcasting, the only podcast I listened to for 12 months when I first started podcasting, was Pat Flynn. And I just loved his generosity and his warmth. He runs the Smart Passive Income podcast. And then I realized, oh, wow, there's actually other podcasts around. But when it comes to, and Eve, like we'll talk about soon, running workshops, I used to always try and be someone else. And that's where it became a bit of a trap because things weren't authentic to me. So navigating that, I think, is an interesting process.
Interesting. And so how long have you been running workshops for, live workshops?
Yeah, well, I didn't really call myself a facilitator. This really started back in 2012 when I was living in Broome, a remote country town in Western Australia. And I was actually working in a marketing role. But we had a request, when I was working for the TAFE there, we had a request to run some presentation skills training for our local shire. We have a shire up there because it's so small.
And
it was so expensive to fly trainers up from Perth, like really expensive. The flights aren't cheap. And I just thought, look, I read a lot about this sort of stuff. I love writing presentations. Maybe I could do this. And so I said yes. I spent 8 weeks just like methodically planning it. And so that kind of kicked off the love for it. It was never a full-time job until 2019, really. So quite when I started my own business. I've always been sort of messing around. Yeah.
That is nuts that you worked for a marketing company in Broome, because I think of Broome as a real red dirt kind of little town, right?
Red dirt's exactly right. Red dirt, blue skies, blue oceans. So I was working for a TAFE over there. So state government, TAFE, working in the marketing, trying to attract people to courses, and that's how it came up. There are lots of great opportunities there, though, I'd say. I'd definitely encourage anyone to move remote. It was like the best thing I could have done for 7 years, really.
My wife and I were very, very, very much into the idea of having a little piece of land, some chooks and growing some, because I grow vegetables and I bake bread and all that kind of thing. But we live on the beaches of northern beaches of Sydney, which is like a much, much quieter version of the sunny coast. And when we had our daughters, we were just at the beach one day at this like surf competition. And we saw all these super ripped up, healthy, tan teenagers like doing all this, you know,
beautiful fitness community, and we're like, this is the place to be. It'd be selfish to take them out of this, we thought.
Great move.
Just because we wanted some, you know, a place to grow more potatoes, you know. But that's awesome. Okay. And by the way, TAFE, I went to TAFE. I love TAFE. I think TAFE is, for me, it fit my vibe so much better than uni ever did.
Yeah. And I think if you're listening in America, it's called community colleges. But I agree. And I went to university. I just did this, you know, well, my friends went to university, so I did the same thing. I thought that was what you were meant to do, but it doesn't really equip you with actual skill. And especially now, I find it really interesting with like the disruption of AI and university as well. Like, sometimes I wake up in the morning and think, maybe I should just, will my career be disrupted? And should I just become a hairdresser or find a trade? You know, there are certain elements now where those skills, like being good with your hands, like that's hard to get disrupted with the technology that's coming out now. But I agree. I think it's very practical, you know, real world skill.
Do you think that there's a, so how do you believe, you know, if you were to speculate how your job could be replaced by artificial intelligence?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of the value that I provide clients is like using my brain and speaking.
Yeah.
And I think AI is doing all of that. And in fact, it's such an, in terms of the intelligence that's coming out there, it's going to be, I'm watching all the videos about what's coming our way. Like, it's just superhuman intelligence. So, you know, it's what it can't do is yet, and maybe in 2 or 3 years, possibly. But like, often clients come to me for advice on things and I provide it. So maybe, you know, maybe I need to figure out a better way to serve clients or think about the business model that can support that. But I'm keeping my eye out, that's for sure. I don't have answers for you. I'm speculating and I'm very aware of what's happening.
Yeah, I think, you know, we run a digital marketing agency, and so you can do copywriting and strategy and all sorts of stuff with AI, image creation. But I think that the human understanding of what tools to give it, and what prompts to give your artificial intelligence is the main thing for now, at least. So, like, someone described to me the other day as like having one of those scientific calculators you had at school, that if you already know how to just do pluses and takeaways like I did, then that's all it can do. But if you're a rocket scientist and you know how to get what the letter E means on a calculator, you know, syntax error and all of those brackets and stuff like that, then you might be better off with it. So I think that it depends on who's using it. Was just the vibe that I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the best analogy I've ever heard. I'm so stealing that off you, your friend. So thank you for that. But I think, yeah, I mean, like, again, it comes back to, I guess, the book that I read about was Workshop. So what it can't replace is getting people together, creating connections, like that energy and momentum that you need. It can't do that yet. So
no, yeah, it can't reach out and hug us just yet.
No, not yet.
Yeah, wouldn't, I mean, I do kind of enjoy and hate equally the concept of us doing this VR when we're in the same room. Interesting, but also a bit like creepy. We're getting old, aren't we, when we think that's...
I think so. I think I honestly feel like my parents said the same thing about mobile phones and automatic cars.
They would have, though. Hey, like,
yeah.
Apparently they said this about printed books. When printed books first came out, the storytellers were like, no one's going to know how to tell a story anymore. And then the printing press, and like Gutenberg or whoever did the printing press was like public enemy number one. And then radio and TV and then TikTok, it's all the enemy. And it probably is to an extent, but it connects people like yourself and me with the beautiful audience listening as well. So how lucky we are. All right, so you started your own full-time business doing this in 2019. Congratulations, 4 years in. Most people will never get that far before going back to the grind. So I've touched on the fact that you work with big organizations and you've worked with mining companies, BHP, and you traveled all around the world doing that. You mentioned things like India and Singapore, but you also work with the smaller organizations like tech startups, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Can you just give us a little breakdown of what you do as a coach, because I feel like those two styles of organization need very different things.
Yeah, and I do as well, and like, I'm always battling that question of like, what's my niche? And you're right, 4 years in, and I feel like maybe I need to grow up and decide on what the niche is. Yet I still love the variety of working with different clients and seeing what the challenges are as well. But I think it fundamentally comes down to, you know, you put people in a business and I think you think, oh, everyone will get along and worked well together. But it's actually not something that happens organically many of the time. It has to be well designed and intentional in terms of that. So a lot of the work that I do is about how do you spark connection? How do you lead teams that aren't even in the same area as you? How do you inspire a change rather than just promoting it via an email and expecting it to happen? That doesn't happen. Like, you actually have to really follow through. I think a lot of the work that you do in marketing, I mean, my background is marketing as well. I do a lot of work in organizational psychology, group dynamics. But really, marketing is like, I think it underpins everything because it's all about getting attention and getting people inspired to make a difference and make a change, which I think, and to make it attractive for them, right? So the whole marketing philosophy underpins a lot of the work that I do. It seems to be centering around, even around leadership brand. A lot of work is very different now. Back in the day when I first started, like, you have a hierarchy of work, you kind of get given your orders and you deliver on that. And I think it's shifted a lot since COVID. There's a lot of demand for autonomy, a lot of demand for working for purpose-driven organizations and feeling like you make a difference. So it's rather than relying on your hierarchy and your role to drive a change, you really need to like engage people, talk about it. Also, of course, you know, just say, hey, this is how it is. But there's just ways of navigating that, communicating that, which applies to if you're a founder of a startup through to a supply chain general manager at BHP. It's the same concern that you think about, like, how am I going to get my people to do what I need them to do?
Totally. I think it's really interesting looking at it as a marketing thing where you've actually got to sell your ideas to your team. One of the companies that we market for, three awesome guys called Evocative Mental Fitness. What they do is they had some really, really bad experiences with mental health and suicide back in their sort of youth. Well, they're still younger than me, but they got into mental fitness and personal development coaching. And they realized that they were just really coaching the CEOs and the leaders, people who could afford it or problem aware or solution seeking. But they realized that, oh, the barista isn't getting this training, or the diesel mechanic down there isn't getting this training. So they started running these workshops. But one of the challenges that we found in the marketing is the leader has to be able to sell that idea to their team as a good idea rather than just a bunch of hooey, because most people, bless them, I'm jealous of them sometimes, are great just rocking up at work and then leaving work at the door when they go home. And so marketing the idea of what sort of professional development and personal development to your team, that's very interesting. So talk to us about that. How do you sell this as a good idea?
Well, it's quite funny. I did a podcast episode about this. So it was called How to Get People to Show Up to Your Workshops Without Telling Them It's Mandatory. Because that's the case, right? Yeah. And often, like, I'll rock up, like, a client has organized a workshop for that, their frontline team, and like half of them are just sitting there arms crossed going, what the heck is all of this about? I think it's coming, like, everything we do, I think, actually has to come from an energy from yourself in terms of your passion. So if you're trying to sell an idea and you're not interested in it, same as me trying to lead a workshop that I don't believe in, and sometimes I've had to do that in the past for organizations when I've just needed the cash, but I knew that the culture didn't support what I was teaching and I felt very conflicted. But if your passion or your energy towards a topic or an area of expertise or a workshop that's coming up doesn't like shine through your message, then that's an uphill battle. I think we all know the marketing phrase, like, what's in it for me? I think it's just, sort of sharing your story and like, hey, like, this is the reason why I think this is important. I think overcoming objections nice and early is really key. So when I was in India, I was running a big workshop for construction leaders, and these are, they manage multi-million billion-dollar projects. And I'm this young upstart from corporate head office in Brisbane. I haven't been on a construction site in India, so what the hell am I doing up there teaching them about leadership, right? And I knew that was an objection, so I called it out immediately. And I said, look, you're the experts in construction. I'm not here to teach you about that. You have experiences in leading teams, good and bad. We're here to share that over the next couple of days. And immediately that disarms them. So I think calling it out, I think the other challenge is that everyone is so time poor these days. And I think sometimes we think workshops are the answer to everything. But what I've learned, over the last few years is actually there's ways to share a message, information and inspire people that don't require bringing everyone together or getting them off site for a day or two. So yeah, I think being aware of that context is really important.
I love the concept of bringing up the objections people will have before they do. And we do that in our marketing copy all the time. If someone's given away, you know, like a meditation, then you say, okay, I know what you're thinking. This sounds like some woo-woo, hippie, fairy, magical nonsense. But here's the truth, that sort of thing. And then it does bring down people's wall a little bit because they can now relate to the fact that you understand what they're thinking. And that's really cool. So India, do you live in India or you just work there for a little bit?
Yeah, I worked there for a bit. So, I mean, in 2019, so pre-COVID, I was traveling all around the world delivering workshops. So Hong Kong, Papua New Guinea, Singapore, India, wow. France. I even got to France. So one of my mentors, she used to work at Google. She wrote a book called Pivot. And through podcasting, actually, we got to become friends and she flew me to France to run workshops with her for Chanel. So that was pretty amazing. It was a good year. And so, of course, I was gutted in 2020. Like, yeah. Moved everything virtual. But I mean, I love planes. I love international travel.
Have you done any in the last year or two?
I was in California in February and I ran an event in Malaysia, a corporate strategy event in March.
Epic. That's really, yeah. Really cool. I love to hear that. Love to hear that. I love, I've always been, I mean, sounds so cliche these days as a white upper middle class kid, just be like, I love to travel. But my dad was a travel agent when I was a kid.
Okay.
And so we actually did travel heaps because he would kind of go and test out hotels and flights, that sort of thing, and take them off. So it was really, really cool. But my daughters, that they were born in July 2020, and we did our first flight overseas to Fiji like a month ago. And it was really great. And it just brought that vibe back, not for Instagram photos and traveling, but just like talking to some different people for once. And just little things like hearing different music on the radio and a different language on the radio in your taxis, you know, and just realizing that this taxi is like, the car seats in this taxi are very lackluster compared to the safety we've got in Australia. I love those little just quirky differences. Tell us, I hate to put you on the spot. Do you have any really culture shock stories about any of these countries you visited?
I think I've been to so many. Mongolia was like an amazing country.
Wow.
The interesting thing about Mongolia was, actually, I ran a workshop in Canada for these mining supervisors, and one of them had worked in Mongolia. He was an Australian guy, and he said to me, Leanne, it's really interesting, but I actually connect more with Mongolian culture than the Canadian culture. I didn't understand it at the time until I went to Mongolia. I realized it's actually they're kind of like Aussies, like very down to earth, really, really fun. Canadians are a bit too polite. Mongolians will tell you, like, you know what it's like.
Yeah.
So, I think more in terms of like maybe time, like in India, the workshop was meant to start at 9 o'clock. At 9:15, breakfast arrived, right? So like no one's sitting down and I'm like, oh my gosh, we have all this stuff to get through. We didn't really kick off till like 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
France, similar. In Hong Kong, it's very all about the status and like who the leaders are. So that was, I started on time, it finished on time, it had to finish at a certain hour. When we had the president like in the room of the company, no one would talk, right? The second he left, people would start engaging. There's all these like cultural intricacies in terms of the work. In terms of stories, America's kind of a fun place, right? Like just going over, I went to Vegas. My first trip was to Vegas in February, the second borders opened. Wow. To Las Vegas. And I was actually there for a conference with my business coach. But yeah, just get them on politics, guns, healthcare. They thought the Australian system of healthcare was broken. They're like, huh? Yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Feels like the opposite to us, obviously. Yeah. I mean, I took my kids to, my girls were born with hip dysplasia, which means their hips are just out of alignment a little bit because they're twins and they get all bundled up in there. And so we have to take them for yearly checkups now to this specialist. And it's just, we don't get our credit card out. It's more, it costs more to park at the hospital than to do the rest of it.
We're so lucky here.
So good. So good.
Yeah.
And I think California is a, you know, my brother-in-law used to live in California, so we used to go over there like once a year. And I just think people are so, as much as Aussies are really, really friendly and relaxed, with strangers in the street, I think Americans are much more likely to be part of a conversation.
Oh, yeah. And even in New York, like, they'll just throw you compliments. People will walk up to you and just start talking and, like, just on a nice jacket. I'm like, no one in Australia has ever said that to me. And you're right. They're just, I don't know if they're more open or if they know that we're Aussies, but you're right. That's a good observation.
In Australia, if someone came up to you and said, nice jacket, you'd be like, what charity? What charity are you selling for?
Yes. What do you want?
These charity muggers who are so damn friendly. So 2-Hour Workshop Blueprint, that's the book you've got strategically placed in the background there. This is your new book, which is going really, really well. Is that a full-length book?
It's 186 pages. But I think it's more about, which is funny, right, because it's a 2-hour workshop, so you think it'd be, like, really punchy. And I cut out a lot of it. I have a podcast all about facilitation and workshops, and I started that because when I was working for this big mining company, my boss just sent me to start running these. And I'm like, what the hell? How do you run this? Like, why are people not answering my questions? So I started the podcast just to find out what other people were doing.
Time facilitator, right? That's your
podcast? That's it. And then, then I get messages on LinkedIn, people asking me, oh, how do I run? I'm just running a short workshop. And there wasn't one particular podcast episode I could give that would actually cover my methodology, like, to get it done quickly. So yeah, that was what brought the book. And it's, 2-hour workshop, but it applies for all day workshops, 1-hour workshops, whatever. Right. It's flexible, but I think people like having, I don't know if you do a lot of articles with, like, listicles, like the top 5 things. People love numbers and titles. So I thought, let's be really focused here.
We always do it in lead magnets for marketing. And we find that the more random the number, the better. Like 37 step blueprint, like everyone's done, 5 steps, 10 steps, but I remember the one that got me into coaching in the first place, I downloaded a lead magnet called, like, the 104 steps to start a 6-figure coaching business. But so random, 104. Nah. Why didn't they stop at 100? They must know what they're doing. So that's rock and roll. Okay, sweet. So
what's up, guys? Alex here. If you're enjoying the episode, please don't forget to give us a subscribe on whatever channel or platform you're watching or listening to this. Really helps us to make an amazing show every week. Thank you so much. Back to the episode.
I know that you got 186 pages of a book, and the whole reason you wrote the book was because people were asking two generalized questions about how to run a workshop. But I'm about to do the same sort of thing with you. You must have some elevator pitches for recommending this book that help you to explain, maybe just 2 or 3 key things that we might not think about when running a workshop. Could you just take us through 1 or 2 of these, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've got a stack. So I'll pick my favorites or the ones that are top of mind for me at the moment. I think a lot of people focus on content, like, immediately, and that's what I used to do. So, like, if I was running back to Brew when I was asked to run the first workshop on presentation skills, my assumption was a workshop equals a PowerPoint deck, right? So I'd open PowerPoint, I'd find some cool stats, I'd copy and paste it into PowerPoint, move it around, add some images and some videos. That was my workshop. It's not about the content anymore. Like, in 1980, 1990s, possibly, we have so much information now. The job is to actually cut out the information and give people a direct path to what they're after. So that's one thing, is, like, actually culling out stuff is more important. Reduce the overwhelm and provide a clear path for someone. The other thing is to begin with the experience in mind. Again, something I always focused on was, like, what are the skills and knowledge that someone needs? What's the irony of that is, like, I had a client once, they wanted a strategy day. And they said they wanted blue sky thinking, but they wanted to hold it in this boardroom where there were just photos of, like, old men plastered on the walls, right? So what I mean, begin with the experience in mind, is like, okay, so you're after blue sky thinking. Why don't we go in a venue, like, high ceilings where we walk outside, right? So the experience actually really matters. Same with another client who wanted to expand over to Western Australia, based in Queensland. And I said, why don't we host it in Perth? Like, if actually put you into the place where you want to be. So yeah, think about those objectives, the experiential objectives, not just your rational outcomes, like the skills and the knowledge and that stuff. So, those are 2 key things I could go on, but we'll keep it.
No, that's great. That makes a lot of sense. And I love the second one, especially that one, both. The content thing, yes, because we know that if someone really wanted the answer to a question, they could have it immediately without coming to your workshop.
Yeah.
But the context thing is really, really great, because we've all been to too many hotel rooms, right? Just hotel boardroom, just 100 chairs, and it's too cold. And then they're table at the back of the room. It's like, give me a break. That's a really, really cool idea. And people do feel better, especially when you work from whether you're at home or at an office, just getting out into a different environment can be so creatively freeing, right?
Oh, absolutely. And like, you know, I had a client the other day and they're like, oh, they're bringing in like 130 developers to Brisbane. And they go, we just want to focus on connection. I was like, okay, if we're focusing on connection, like why do we need like all this content? Why don't we just do like activities through the day and like move the tables around? Do we even need tables? Like, so it really does matter about like, what is the like feeling that you want? How do you want people to feel and then design back from there?
So how do we get away from the sort of cheesy perception of like team building workshops and professional connection workshops where they have you playing little games and everyone saying interesting facts about yourself? Like, that's the kind of thing that you put in TV shows to be cringy on purpose. Famously in The Office. I don't know if you've seen The Office, but they do want to just, it's just,
I love The Office.
Super rough to watch their team building workshops. So yeah, how do we modernize this and how do we sell it to a team without making a workshop sound cheesy and unnecessary?
Well, I think it's, I mean, first of all, can I say like, I love The Office and I'm watching it the third time again, the US version, the US one.
Never seen it.
I was same as you until I was on a flight and they had it on. Like, so this is like only last year. I've just started getting into the US version. It's phenomenal.
Great.
Really good. Diversity Day is a good episode actually based around this.
Okay.
Some of the really crazy and cringy activities. You know what? Like, okay, so I actually think, I talk about this. I don't think it's a bad thing that workshops have a bad name because then you're going in, right? So everyone's expectations are fairly low. Like, it's going to be cheesy. She's going to make us hug each other. We're going to be singing Kumbaya. I don't care if that's the expectation, as long as we can get people there. And the second we get them there, then we disrupt it with doing things that are relevant, that are going to help them, that are useful. So they walk away thinking that was actually a really interesting, helpful, practical day. So I actually think the expectation currently around workshops serves us if we're willing to disrupt and try something a bit different. I don't think we need to change the brand just yet. Let you do that in terms of your design and how you bring that to life when your session begins.
Interesting to just be a disruptor and just exceed everyone's expectations because everyone believes it's going to be shit. So,
and it's hard. Yeah. That's what it is. And I think, like, I know it's terrible, but it's actually helpful that people think it's going to be crap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because
100%. No, I mean, I will transparently put this out there and we talk about it on the show all the time, but it is, it's often relevant to talk about with guests. I am such a resistor to personal development and networking groups and going out for just a coffee with like 12 other people who run businesses. I just don't see it as a great use of my time. Mm. I've done a bunch of the personal development stuff back when I was early on in business when I needed to transition out of this being like a chef and a punk rocker and, you know, just a bit of a stubborn teenager, I guess, and then moving into a more open-minded and resilient individual. But now I get calls up from all of these, you know, people are always pitching me on workshops and come along to my networking group. I want no part of it. But that, I know, I understand that they're hugely helpful and necessary, but I think that it is really refreshing when you go along to something and it's a bit different. Like these, do they have success resources up in Brisbane where like Gary Vee and stuff come along?
Yeah, I went to a Tony Robbins one, 2008, so Sydney. I mean, I love Gary Vee.
Yeah, he's the man.
Yeah.
So what I love about him, the thing that he does at these events, which I think is so good compared to everyone else, is he doesn't pitch anything. Mm. Everyone else, they do their like 30-minute value speech and their 30-minute pitch, run to the back of the room, and then he comes on, headlines and just kind of like talks about stuff and wears a beanie and thinks, and at the end of it he's out of it. And I think that is disrupting the seminar space in a sense, because he feels so unprepared. He's so casual, no suit, no pitch, no PowerPoint.
I agree. And so, I mean, there's two sides to this, I think, because I mean, I'm a Virgo chronic over planner. And my business coach is Alan Weiss. He wrote the book Million Dollar Consulting and 60 other books. And I remember seeing him speak and he just had two flip charts. He told stories. He basically had a one pager with just some diagrams on it. But it was like the best workshop ever.
Right.
And it's just speaking from pure expertise. But I mean, he's been around the block a while, but also comfort in your own skin as well. Like, he doesn't care what people think, same as Gary Vee. Like, his self-worth isn't built on people pleasing. And so they can just come and go, like, what is the most value to this group right now, and that's where they deliver from, and it shows.
Have you gotten over that over-preparing Virgo style these days as you've become better at running workshops?
I think so, but it still sneaks in. Like, and I talk about that in my book. Like when the stakes are higher, like let's just say I have a workshop and I price it at a really high rate, then it's my own, like, oh, I have to over-deliver, and so I have to over-prepare. So I'm a constant work in progress. I wrote this book for me more than anyone, right? Because I had to find a framework to start designing fast because I was burning out from the amount of time I was putting into these things. And plus, in the moment, in the workshop, it just changes on the spot anyway. So what the hell am I doing?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Is that in your book, just to prepare for unexpected things to happen, like that breakfast that came along in India?
Yeah.
So completely that... That must have knocked out your timing. And then, and you see this happen all the time. And often what they do is, like, workshops just end up going late. And then everyone's interested and tired by the end of the day. Let's say that, you know, the unexpected comes up. How do you choose which content to cull or what to do to get back on schedule?
Well, I mean, with this group in India, like, we had workbooks so they could see what was being covered. But a lot of the stuff, I think some of it is connected with other elements. So you think if you've done one to death, you don't really need to repeat it. I spoke to a guy on my podcast, Johnny Quinn. He's based in New Zealand. He talks about non-linear presentations. So he'll have, like, he might have three frameworks maybe to cover for the next half day. And he'll get people to vote on, like, a Slido poll, which one is most pressing for you right now. And just focus on that.
What a good idea.
Such a good idea. And you feel like in control.
That.
Oh, I know. But yeah, you're right. The other thing I do is... Priya Parker, in her book, The Art of Gathering, she says the workshop has begun before it's actually begun. So I'll do like a video ask and I'll send it out to participants and say, hey, you know, this topic is about, like, what's the biggest challenge, or like a question like that. So I get a sense of what the room is feeling before I even go in. That gives me some idea as well. Plus, I mean, just the other side of it is no one really knows what's missing. You just don't tell them. You don't tell them, oh, like, this is meant to go for an hour, now we only have 10 minutes. Don't tell them that. Do the best with the 10 minutes that you have.
Yeah. Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm doing a first aid course in a few days, and they're chronically boring. All right, chronically.
Yeah.
All these certifications I always find been super rough. I did my RSA, which is Responsible Service of Alcohol, back in the day. I did my RCG, which is Responsible Casino Gambling or something like that. Just to work in hospitality venues. But my wife, she's a teacher, and she did a first aid course a couple of weeks ago where the guy, the facilitator, just took two volunteers and just disappeared for like 20 minutes and then came back into the room, ran in, burst through the door with like fake blood all over him. He's like, guys, you've got to come out here now. Didn't tell them what the situation was. And she's like, we were so stressed, and he created this like environment of fear and stress that we've never seen before. And she's like, and we got so much more out of it because doing first aid on a plastic dummy in a quiet, air-conditioned boardroom is very different to he'd had the, like, out in the garden, like, you know, with fake blood spurting everywhere. And I thought it was such a good idea because now she's, you know, she sold me on going to his course because...
Totally.
And that must be, you know, I would love to ask about how you promote yourself as well, but word of mouth must be huge for you.
It's the number one. Yeah. And I think we're talking about that experience right now because of what that person did.
Yeah.
Create an experiential, like, embodied experience. And that's the difference. And that's what you have to sort of create. That's your job, I think, as any type of workshop host, is to create that type of insight, aha moment that actually creates word of mouth. So you're right. And I think it's about one of my favorite books I talk about. It's a book that I've never read before. I haven't read it, but it's called It's Never Crowded Along the Extra Mile.
Yeah.
And it's something I really think about when I weave in, like, what would stand out for this group that might create that watershed moment for them. So you're right. Word of mouth is really important because you want people to be in that session thinking, oh, wow, my leadership team need this, or our team on the West Coast, they'd really find some value in this. So it's really about, yeah, generating those word of mouths through the craft and how you deliver.
Longevity, right, in those extra miles. And to quote a book that I've never read, like you did. I did something for a client the other day. We had some massive, massive issues. And so I was in tech and stuff like that. And so I basically just like, surely there's a retainer invoice to you. And I was like, don't worry about it. We haven't done your thing yet. You know, we haven't launched your ads yet because we've been held up by all this stuff. So we'll just send that, you know, when that's all done. And she goes, I'm reading a book now called Never Lose a Customer Again. And I can tell by the attitude that, you know, you never will. Which, yeah, you know, I think that in you putting the extra mile into your workshops, being different, even if it's a little more work or a little more expense or smaller margins for you, it definitely gives that word of mouth, the referrals and the longevity to your business. So congrats on that one. In terms of marketing it, so word of mouth is one thing.
Yeah.
I'm always really interested how people market to bigger organizations because
yeah.
so many people to talk to, so much red tape, the sale is such a long sale.
That's right.
I know you get a lot of referrals, but talk to me, if you had to start today and go and find some companies to do workshops to, what would you do?
Yeah. Okay. I've got a strategy for this, but you're right. On that, most of my business through corporate has been through connections and referrals. So I want to make that clear. Okay. So if I was starting a business tomorrow, what I would do, I'd actually either go down the podcast route or a white paper.
Okay.
And I pick a provocative topic that would impact leaders with a profit and like that have P&L oversight. So, and pick something that may be a little bit controversial or something quite provocative. And I'd ask for referrals to speak to leaders within organizations that have an opinion on this or leaders that want to build a profile. And I'd say, look, I'm doing this. I'm writing a white paper. I'm interviewing the best 10 leaders in the tech industry within Brisbane or mining or whatever industry it is. The interview will be 30 minutes. So I'd create media.
Brilliant.
To do that.
That's why I started this podcast, to talk to people I wanted to work with.
Yep. Exactly. Oh, absolutely. And then it's win-win. You're learning, your listeners learn. We're mates. You know what I mean?
Thank you, Leanne. I always say I've got 100 new friends through this podcast. No one's ever called me their mate. I will take it. I'm so excited. So that's really, really cool though. See, what a great cold outreach to say that I need your expertise, you know, kind of giving them a bit of praise and just letting them know that you're here.
Yeah, and I think leverage is really important as well. So if you can get someone within your network that actually has a profile, you say, hey, look, you know, John Smith's contributing to this article as well. That really helps. I'm running an executive leader breakfast next month, and that's how I'm sort of doing it as well. I'm inviting clients, but I also want some like peripheral people there as well. And I've got permission to like use a few names to invite others, which is good.
That's really cool. Collaboration always comes up on this show. Yeah. You know the Ocean's 11 movies? You ever watch them? So... Matt Damon, one of the three guys, I think it was Matt Damon, said that, so there was Matt Damon, George Clooney and Brad Pitt starring in those movies. And apparently the director got each one of them to say yes by saying the other two had already said yes. And none of them had, but,
such a great story.
What a great idea, right? So
my gosh, I'm writing it down.
Leo and George, Brad and George are doing it. You would definitely say yes, but he said that to all of them individually, kind of just putting a little bit of star power and doing that in your workshops, just having profile.
That's right.
You must have some great testimonials from some big names, right?
I do. Yeah, I think it's fun. Even for my book, like a lot of the people that are on my book, like I said, Pat Flynn was the only podcast I listened to for 12 months. He's written endorsement for the book. I call them like my friend tours. Like these are people that I've listened to and absorbed, and I really built my business around what they do and their expertise and then tried to find my own way of communicating that. So the fact that I'm like friends with them, that they've bought into, I guess, the book. I've even like had some of my clients, like corporate clients, like buy the book as well. So it's nice to have that support network.
You can be literally one good job away from changing your whole life, right?
Oh, 100%.
If one person with a profile recommends your work to other people, that's in the steamroll it. That's really, really exciting stuff. So what's your plan with this book? You got a podcast, you got a book, you're speaking, you're talking, sounds like you're making some big moves. Can you talk us through your next 6 months?
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's exciting. So for me, just releasing the book was a win. And then I'm like, okay, now that the goalposts have changed, now I really want to get it out there. And I think the mission behind it is I really want to stamp out boring workshops around the world for all the reasons that you've already outlined, Alex. I find it, life is so short to have crappy, you know, when we have time together, let's make it a good, let's make it meaningful.
Yep.
So that's the impact I want to make. That involves just getting the book into the right hands, like hopefully speaking at big events and just seeing where that goes. But yeah, at the moment I'm trying to just get 50, 100 Amazon reviews, I'm hustling to build that flywheel, like you say, and then I can sort of let it go. But at the moment, it's intense reaching out to people, trying to build that momentum, so then I can just release it and see where the book goes, and it will create its own energy as well.
Well, you've certainly got a lot of good energy, and I've really, really enjoyed hearing about everything you do. 40 minutes just goes like that, hey? It goes super duper fast, and I think that, yeah, that is a book that I'd be super interested in. All these books on my shelf here, I haven't read them, but a 2-hour workshop blueprint, that is tangible for me. I love tangible concepts and things that you can take, especially like there is one book on there called Sell Like Crazy, which is an Australian marketer called Sabri Thuby. He's the man. And so I've never read it cover to cover, but what I do is I read like a section on email subject lines, that sort of thing. And you can just open up to the chapter you need. And so I love books like that. And I feel like there's probably a lot of that style in your book where you can, I need one Definitely. Thing out of this today. Let's go to that chapter.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. Yeah, that's the purpose it serves as well. I'm going to find that book Sell Like Crazy too. Sounds good.
Well, you'll be in his marketing funnel if you do. It's a very, you're going to get a ring from his team, but I'd highly recommend it. That's a really, really cool one. So, and he's like one of my mate, not my competitor, because he's way above me, but everyone who like says to me, oh, we've decided to go with someone else. They've gone with King Kong, with Sabri's agency, but I'm flattered to even be mentioned in a similar sentence. So Leanne, mate, it's been a lot of fun. I think this has been a great little show. We're going to definitely link your book in the round wherever this video is being watched right now. And yeah, you got a couple of podcasts, you got a great website, a lot of stuff you do. Really, really cool talking to you today, mate. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Awesome interview. Great to chat.
Stop it. Well, anyone who is watching on the recording or indeed live today, thank you so much. I love you for that. It is Thursday now, which means I'll be back next week with a couple more guests on the Coaches to the Moon podcast. Until then, thank you so much for listening. Much love. Peace out.
Coaches to the Moon will be back next week. Until then, reach us on Facebook at To The Moon Digital Marketing.